The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Ursula von der Leyen's new European Commission has been approved after months of political wrangling following June's elections. With the new team in place, what direction will the EU take on the key issues of defence and the economy? And as global tensions rise, how might Trump's tariffs impact Ireland and Europe? Joining me now to break it all down, John O'Brennan, Jean Monnet Professor of European Integration at NUI Maynooth, and Dan O'Brien, Chief Economist at the Institute of International and European Affairs. Good morning, gentlemen. We'll start with you, John. First of all, a bit of a struggle to get this commission passed.
It was. When the vote was taken in the European Parliament that afternoon, von der Leyen got through with only 54% of the votes, and she had to rely on some far-right deputies supporting her because part of the centrist coalition, including the centre-left and part of Renew Europe, actually voted against her. So I think there are issues around legitimation there. You may remember that back in the summertime when von der Leyen herself was put to the vote in the European Parliament, she sailed through relatively easy. This was much closer, I think, and maybe reflecting a change in mood in the European Parliament as the new commission begins its mandate.
Now, what is that mood? I mean, the Great European Project is a real antidote to, say, Putin's Russia. But it does seem as if some people are lukewarm about the European project, and this is just music to Putin's ears.
Well, yet, firstly, I think it's a reflection of the rightward tack that politics has taken in lots of national jurisdictions. In at least 6 out of 27 member states, the government is now led by the far right or includes a far right member of the coalition. So inevitably, you'd have thought that would have an impact not just on the European Council, but on the European institutions as a whole. And for the first time, we have a member of the far right who's actually a member of the European Commission. This is Raffaele Fitto, the Italian commissioner nominated by Giorgia Meloni. But I think it speaks to something deeper than this and more uneasy, and it's that Europe is in this deeply uncomfortable place now, Pat, especially economically, caught between the United States and China. In many ways, it reminds me of the early 1980s, when there was a real sense of stasis about the European community and a sense that it was falling behind both the United States and China. You may remember that that prompted calls for action, and we ended up with the Single European Act, which was the single most reformist and important set of changes ever to take place within the European community. Now, the shadow over von der Leyen's speech the other day, I think, was twofold. One is Trump and the return of the Trump administration in January, but it was also Mario Draghi and his giant report on European competitiveness, which came out a couple of months ago. He was very forthright in his language. He said, basically, Europe is dying and we need to do a kind of revival of the European project comparable to that which the Single Act achieved in the 1980s. Mm. Now, whether or not that's possible, given the political constellation, I don't know. But there are deep, deep worries about competitiveness as we move into this new era of economic nationalism.
One of the things I heard yesterday, I was at a conference, the UN Global Compact Network was launched in Dublin yesterday. Ireland is now a member of that international network. But many of the participants were talking about the burden of regulation. And that seems to be something that is a problem for many people around Europe.
Well, I think there's a lot of exaggeration here. Let's remember that the entire single market program was about bringing down barriers to trade. And this was enormously beneficial, I would argue, to the great majority of European states. Yes, like globalization, it produced winners and losers. Ireland, I think, proved to be one of the very biggest winners over the last 30 years or so when the single market was in operation. But what we're looking at now is the attempt to reverse regulation, especially in the United States, even where regulations are actually a bit more minimal than they are in Europe. And so the protections that consumers have around the goods that they buy, for example, are less than they are in Europe. If we see a whole-scale attempt to reduce regulation further in the US, I think many people in Europe will look at what we've got and begin to appreciate it more.
Now, moving on to the key area of defence, and the defence commissioner is an interesting choice, principally because of geography.
Yes, there is definitely evidence of a change in the centre of gravity of Europe, I think, and that's reflected in the very prominent number of senior Central and East European people in the commission. Andrius Kubilius is the new commissioner for defence and space. This is the first time that we've ever had a member of the European Commission focused on defence and security. And it simply reflects the extraordinary changes that we have seen, especially in Europe with the Russian invasion of Ukraine in 2022. We're already seeing the European Commission redirecting potentially tens of billions of euros into defence and security. Now, this is an area where the Commission has had very little responsibility in the past. It's the exclusive preserve of member states to manage their own defence and security arrangements. But it is reflective, I think, of this unease, especially in Central and Eastern Europe, about Russia. And it's not just Kubilius, the new European foreign minister, the high representative for foreign affairs and security, is a former Estonian prime minister, Kaja Kallas. The commissioner for enlargement comes from Slovenia. So I think there is new kind of muscle mass within the European institutions around Central and Eastern Europe. And that's a reflection of the fact that they have been much stronger on security and defence issues than France and Germany, the traditional leaders of the European Union.
Well, of course, they're closer to the front line, and that's the front line with Russia, which is what is on everybody's minds, particularly the Lithuanians, the Moldovans, the Poles, anyone who's likely to be impacted by a defeat of Ukraine.
Absolutely. Geography really matters. And as somebody who spent a lot of the last quarter century in Central and Eastern Europe, I can tell you there's this palpable sense of fear about Russia. The shadow of Russian aggression in the past and what it did to the Baltic states and other countries, it's very real for people. And that's why I think in those countries, defence and security is taken much more seriously. Poland, for example, is going to become a defence superpower in Europe. It's already spending more than 4% of its GDP on defence. That's going to go up beyond 5% in the years to come. And as you say, it's a reflection of both geography and the new kind of predatory threat that Russia represents.
And it does look as if Putin's ambition is to kind of rebuild at least part, the European part rather than the Asian part of the USSR.
Yeah, Putin has been very open in the past, both in the speeches that he has made and in a landmark essay in the summer of 2021, months before he sent his troops into Ukraine, in saying that he is an unreconstructed Russian nationalist. He doesn't believe that Ukraine is a real country and has the right to exist. He doesn't believe the Baltic states have a right to exist. He wants to, at the very least, reestablish Russia as the key and predominant power in Europe, and to make sure that its sphere of influence is comparable to that of the Russian Empire in the past and the Soviet Union.
And we shall find out on the 20th of January and beyond whether or not Trump will be Putin's useful idiot, or whether or not there is substance to Trump's presidency. We shall see. Anyway, thank you very much, John, for joining us. John O'Brien, Jean Monnet, Professor of European Integration at NUI Maynooth. Dan O'Brien listening to that conversation. Dan, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, the question of Trump's tariffs. We've seen saber-rattling, but he tweeted out his policy on Mexico and Canada the other night. I don't know what prompted it, but he linked his trade tariffs on those two countries with their lax attitude to immigration into the United States from their territories.
Indeed. Can I just say, Pat, that John and I disagree about plenty of things, but what he's just said there, I think it's really important for an Irish audience to understand how everything changed for Europe in February 2022, and how the invasion of Ukraine by Russia, the attempt to take over an entire country by military force, has utterly changed our continent. And that has changed the European Union. It's changed how everyone thinks about security and defense. We are very unusual. We've just had an election campaign where that really hasn't been discussed. But we are part of that European project, and we really need to understand that our partners are all profoundly changing their posture, because many of them fear that they won't exist in the future, that they will be invaded and taken over, and we really need to understand how grave that is. So going from east to west, it was very surprising. I was very surprised by Donald Trump's focus on his immediate neighbors, because during his first term, he renegotiated a long-standing trade deal called NAFTA with the his neighbors, Mexico and Canada. So that was his own trade deal. So it was surprising that he would sort of attack these two countries, even though the trade relations between them had been designed by him. He usually doesn't attack his own achievements. He's more inclined to attack the achievements of others. So I think it sends out a very clear signal from the Trump administration, or what the Trump administration is likely to do. It's going to play extreme hardball on international trade and the use of tariffs against even its friends.
Yeah, that linking with migration across the Canadian border and the Mexican border into the United States, if this is the focus of those people who are around Trump and influencing him, it looks like the United States is heading in a white nationalist direction. In other words, they want to bleach America again.
I wouldn't agree with that term, Pat, but certainly it would seem that immigration has risen rapidly in the United States, as it has in Europe. There's concerns in the United States, particularly on the southern border, where there's been it's declined recently, but there's been record levels of illegal crossing of the border, and many Americans are concerned, and one can see why they might be concerned about a very lax border control. But the linking of, as you say, migration and also concerns about fentanyl. There's been an epidemic of drug deaths in the United States linked to this drug fentanyl, that he wants to close the border and have greater security over the border. Again, neither of those things are particularly weird or strange for a U.S. president to want. Joe Biden did clamp down on illegal border crossings as well. But the fact that he's doing it with friends, two nearest neighbors, is an ominous sign for us, because, you know, we in Europe and in Ireland in particular, very close relations with the United States. And if he's going to go after his neighbors in most aggressively and early, we have a lot to fear over that as well.
Now, his theory is that you can onshore a lot of stuff that, you know, does come in from other countries. And by upping the price of the stuff that's coming in, it will make American companies competitive with that stuff. And I'm thinking particularly because I was in Mexico recently and I saw the supply chain action that goes into the making of a motor car. In this case, it was BMW in their factory in Mexico. And, you know, huge amounts of car parts go into the United States to feed the American vehicles, not Chinese, not German, but American vehicles. And if the price on those parts goes up, then the price of the auto goes up. And even if the Americans then are enabled to build those parts themselves, it means they're doing it at a higher price than the Mexicans were supplying those parts, which again means the price of the car goes up. And he doesn't seem to get that.
Well, we used to have a Ford plant in Cork in Ireland many, many years ago. And the reason it existed was not because it made economic sense. It's because we had tariffs and they had to bring the cars in parts and assemble them in Cork, and it made cars very expensive. So economists nearly all agree that having these sort of tariffs and making companies work in inefficient ways just increases costs for consumers and is not a good idea. That said, we live in a changed world where there can be arguments, economic security arguments, for using tariffs. For example, the European Union has recently said that it was going to put tariffs on Chinese electric vehicles. That's bad for European consumers, but without it, it could mean that the auto industry in Europe disappears. Now, that would be a very big change for Europe. So there can be some cases. The reason I'm really worried about the Trump administration for the Irish context is we have American companies in Ireland making American pharmaceuticals for the American market. So Trump says, why should American companies go to foreign countries, make their products and ship them back to the United States, where they, instead of paying American workers and American taxes, they're doing it abroad? I think we're very vulnerable on that. because that is a big part of the success of the pharmaceutical industry here in Ireland.
Now, the question of tit-for-tat tariffs, if they decide to impose tariffs on the EU, because we are part of that bloc, and whether we're picked out selectively by the United States or not is a different question. But if tariffs are applied across the bloc, what response might the bloc do to try and hurt America? Because it will be tit-for-tat.
Well, you're absolutely right. We can say for absolute certainty, my contacts in Brussels, elsewhere, they are working right now and have been working for some time on designing retaliatory tariffs. So Europe will put tariffs on American goods coming into Europe. Again, it's not a good thing because it will increase the price for European consumers. But there is a view that if you don't retaliate and you don't show the person, the country that puts tariffs on your goods, that you are prepared to hit them back, the fear is that they will just continue doing this whenever they feel like it.
So what products might we be able to put tariffs on that are coming in from the United States?
Well, we don't import many agricultural produce from the U.S. because chlorinated chicken and all those sort of things. But other things that we do, for example, the chemicals, there's a big, it's a very integrated market across the transatlantic in pharmaceutical and chemicals. Would the European Union hit that area? Again, that would be very damaging for us. And I think we should be lobbying hard in Brussels to try and reduce whatever retaliatory measures there are in that area. But the transatlantic, you know, transatlantic trade is huge. America is our biggest export market, by far bigger than any other single country for all of Europe, and that's also true for Ireland. So this really does threaten to have a major damaging effect for Ireland in particular, but also for all of Europe.
Mm. Now, I've heard even this morning the Finnish ambassador was on our business breakfast program talking about the threat from those tariffs and saying, you know, making a special case of why he shouldn't do it to Finland. And all over the world, there'll be people sort of bending the knee to Trump to try and get a special case for their country. I doubt he's much for turning, because this is a return to kind of the ugly American, where the biggest economy in the world bullies everybody else.
Not words I would use, but you know.
No, but I'm just breaking it down to its simplest thing. Might is right. That's the attitude of Donald Trump's incoming administration.
Europe is one of the biggest trading blocks in the world, and I can tell you European trade diplomats don't mess around. If they have the power, they will exercise that power, and that's how the world works. So, you know, the difference with Donald Trump is it is this view of trade that if a country sells more stuff to America than America sells to that country, and Ireland is in that position, that he somehow views that as being a ripoff, which is economically just completely crazy. But that's how he seems to believe it. And people around him, including people who understand trade better, like Robert Emmett Lighthizer, his trade guy in the last administration, picked out Ireland and Germany in his book recently, saying that Ireland and Germany have a big trade surplus with the United States, and for them, that's bad. So they just don't like this idea that a country sells more to them than we buy from America. Now, an interesting idea that's going around is that Europe, instead of looking, Europe will look for exemptions and say we shouldn't have these tariffs for Europe, but also to do a deal around agricultural produce and around liquefied natural gas, so that we would agree to buy more American agricultural produce and more liquefied natural gas, and Trump could walk away and say, look, I've got a $100 billion deal for American goods. This is how my pressure works. And we get cheaper agricultural goods and we get liquefied natural gas to replace Russian gas. And that gives Trump a win. That's an idea that's circulating. It could be one that's of interest come January, February.
All right. On that maybe slightly optimistic note, Dan O'Brien, Chief Economist with the Institute of International and European Affairs. Thank you very much.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.